session number 24611-05.
Mr. Campbell, reel 5. Now, did you come under fire much? I believe you ran into trouble near the crossing of the Elbe.
So we were going up towards the Elbe. We had the 15 Scottish, and we came under German airbursts, which burst in the air and sent shrapnel all over the place. The 15 Scottish lads who were on top of our tanks jumped down to take shelter. And their officers ordered them back onto the tanks so that we could get them out of the range of the German shells, which they did very reluctantly because they were actually in the open sitting on top of our tanks. But they managed to get them and came right through it.
Now, what about, did you ever come under much fire from German tanks, aircraft or sort of 88 millimetres, or were you looking?
88 millimetres, there was one or two cases, but we just evaded them, and that was it.
Were you aware of the risk from bazookas? Oh, not bazookas, Panzerfaust.
Oh, yeah. Definitely, but there was nothing really you could do. Just a case of pot luck and hope that luck held with you. If you saw them, you blasted them first before they got near you. But a lot of them were, when you went through the towns, they were hidden in the ruins and things like that. And you had to watch yourself because of an awful lot of booby traps was left by the Germans.
Tell us about the booby traps. What were you
aware? Well, there was one case, we went through this town and there was a beautiful revolver with a pearl handle on a table in one of the bombed houses. But what we noticed was the fact that there wasn't much rubble on the table, although the house was badly bombed. So we assumed that that was a booby trap, and it was just a case of leaving it. But it was beautiful, it was pearl handled and everything on this table, little things like that.
And so you've been warned, obviously.
We have been warned not to touch anything.
What about mines on the roads? I mean, could you do anything about that?
Not really, but they used to have the sappers clearing the roads. And they laid white tapes and used to drive between the white tapes. They had cleared that in between the white tapes. So you were all right that way. Although sometimes that you didn't have the sappers and it was just a chance you took. Some of the tanks were blown up. The tracks were blown off, rather, and things like that.
Now, anything else you remember about, you know, the fighting in Germany? You were there, you know, arrived in February.
Remember, we had the American 17th Airborne troops came onto our tank. They had landed, we picked them up. But again, as I said, it was a case of the Germans were running. It was only pockets of resistance, really, that we were hitting. I wasn't in any big battle, tank battle, or nothing like that. Just the resistance.
Now, what about the surrender of the German troops? What was their demeanour?
Well,
what did you think of them? You know,
I happened to be on wireless watch when word came through that we had to make our way to Lüneburg Heath as the Germans were going to sign an armistice and Monty was wanting the tanks to surround the caravan he was in. So we made our way to there and just stayed put. We didn't see any Germans. It was a case of staying put until told to move on. But before that, we passed Belsen. I never mentioned that. Just
tell us about that.
We were going towards Celle, they call it, C-E-L-L-E. And we came across Belfin, the camp. We weren't allowed in it. We were actually more frightened of that camp than anything else, because we were only, I was only 19, and all we could see was skeletons walking towards you in this camp, and the smell of burning was horrible. And we found out later that it was Belsen concentration camp.
Had you heard about the concentration camps before then?
We had heard about concentration camps, but they never expected to see one. We had heard about Dachau. We had heard about that. But when we came across Belsen, I thought, oh no, what is it? Walking to, they're like zombies. Actually walking skeletons, walking towards you. And bodies lying on the ground, and half of them naked, half of them in tatters, women and men. And only the water truck was allowed in. And when he came out, he was disinfected, and so was the truck. And he went back in again with water, because you weren't allowed to feed them, because their stomachs had shrunk. So
they got it was worse than you'd expected.
Oh, yes.
Anything else before V-Day?
Before D-Day?
V-Day.
V-Day. No, we went up to Lunenburg Heath, and we stayed there a while, and then we were ordered to go up to the border of Denmark.
Where did you actually spend V-Day? Was that at the border of Denmark or Lunenburg?
We spent V-Day in a place, I've never forgotten that name, a place called Siebenachen. Don't ask me how to spell it. You better look the map. Siebenachen. I always remember that. It was a very, very small village.
Is that on the way up to Denmark?
That was, I don't think it was very far from Hamburg, actually, if I mind right.
Okay.
As I say, we lost all direction.
That's understandable. What sort of celebrations did you have? What was it like? And how did you feel in yourself?
Don't ask me. My head was sore in the morning. Let's put it that way. But it was a small village. And actually, the photograph I've got is taken on VE Day. And there was a lot of German trucks, which we ran into this small grassy bit in the village. It was like a typical English village with the village green. It was like that. And we ran this, it was a sort of hollow where the grass was. We ran their German trucks and all the equipment in there. We poured petrol over and set a light to it. The whole lot was blazing. We're all dancing around this thing, half sozzled with rum. But the sore head in the morning.
And how did you feel? I mean, you know, I mean,
oh, elated. Very much so. Because we had come through it and we were still alive. There was nothing wrong with us. So that was it. But we went and we cleared the Germans out of the, it was small bungalows they had. We cleared them out, and we just stayed in the bungalows and in a decent bed for a change. But that was the, which I forgot half of it, through drink.
So you moved up to the Denmark border. What was happening there? That would be still in May, wouldn't it?
Yes, yeah. That was a place called Flensburg, I think it's called. Flensburg.
And what was going on there?
Well, really nothing. The Danish troops took over there, and we weren't allowed to cross the border. We stayed there. We came back from there. We were told to go back to Cologne. So we went all the way back to Cologne. Now, at the end of that year, they took the tanks away from us. and we did garrison duties in Cologne. But before we went there, we were billeted in a place called Bergheim.
Just outside Cologne.
Bergheim, and the other half, S Squadron, they were in a place called Horm, which was down the road from us.
Now, what were you actually doing? I mean, you were there for quite a while.
We were just billeted. We weren't doing anything. We were just there.
What were your billets like?
We were in a factory. It used to be a Swiss factory making aluminium. The Germans had taken over and confiscated it. We were billeted in the factory with the American 17th Airborne Troops. They were there as well. They had their canteen, their ex-canteen as they called it, which had everything from the kitchen sink up the way. We had nothing. However, I got friendly with this Texas boy, Johnny. Never ever found out his last name, Johnny. Oh, Jock, come on, have a beer. I said, well, where can we get beer? In the canteen. Not got beer in your canteen? Of course we have. We've got everything in the canteen. So he took my pal and I into the canteen. Well, we're all half drunk and everything in the canteen. Sold meals, everything. Donuts, coffee, beer, the lot. And I always remember this other fellow, American boy. He was drink really he was talking through. Swore at me, asked me what the hell I was doing in an American canteen. I wasn't allowed in here. And the boy, the Texan, that had brought us in, just got up. That's my so-and-so friends you're talking to. Bang! Knocked him out with one punch. So we wanted to leave, and they said, no, he said, you'll stay here. He says, he's just talking through drink. So we had a good time in the ex-canteen there. But the fraternisation was still on.
Non-fraternisation
was still on.
Was it enforced? I mean, or
it was supposed to be. It was issued, I've got it from, issued from Monty, direct from Montgomery. We were not allowed to speak to the Germans.
What did you think about that?
Well, I thought it was stupid. Because I, for one, and the regimental sergeant major, for another one, didn't even listen to it, because I started going out with a German girl, albeit we had to be very careful. We could only meet at night time when it was dark, and he was actually going out with her aunt. That's how I got in contact with her. And she had worked in the factory, and they started the factory up again, although we were still in the factory. She worked in the office, and one day I was on guard duty outside, and an American Jeep drove up, so stopped him. He asked where the company office was, told him, show your pass, show him his pass, right down. So the next second, after about a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, out came this Jeep with this girl sitting in it, the one I was going around with. I thought, oh no, I've had it now. What on earth happened? However, she came back at night time, and I made signs to her and meet her in the usual place. Met her at night, asked her what had happened. Someone had reported her to the American military authorities that she was a Nazi. So I said to her, where are you? I said, I want the truth, where are you? She said, yes and no. She spoke beautiful English, the girl. I says, what do you mean by yes and no? Well, she said, if I hadn't joined the party, I got no ration card, I got no work permit, how was I supposed to live? She says, I joined the party, she said, but I wasn't active in it. She says, I joined it for necessity. She says, I'll give you my badge. So I've got her badge to this day. Her Nazi badge to this day. The round badge. The black swastika. The red round it. It's lying through there. I've got it. Oh, that was that. She says, no, she says, I hated them. She says, but you got no work permit. She says, you got no ration book. She says, you couldn't live. You had to join. So that was that. But I continued seeing it. And then the non-fraternisation ban, word came through that we could talk to them. And they had a small... it was a hall, actually. And they held a dance in the hall, and the German population were allowed to come in. So I went down with her and dancing away. And this old lady sitting, German woman, leastways I thought she was. And as we came off the floor, in beautiful English, she said, you're beautiful dancers, the two of you. And I looked at her and I said, and you speak beautiful English. Where did you learn your English from? I am English. I said, well, how are you English and you are here? She must have been about 60 years of age. She married a German and chose to stay there during the war. I says, were you not put in a concentration camp? No, she said, they left me alone. I said, where's your husband? She says, he was killed during the war. But she's a nice old lady. Mm-hmm.
Moving on from that, were you aware of any black market?
Yes, very much, although we weren't in it, but yes, definitely it went on.
What did you know of it?
Well, let's put it this way. Bars of soap, you could get anything. And when I say anything, I mean anything. Cigarettes, anything for cigarettes. It was mostly cigarettes and soap, because there's no soap. If you had coffee, I tasted their ersatz coffee and their bread, their ersatz bread. The coffee... it was like hot water. There was hardly a taste of coffee in it. I don't know what it was made of. It wasn't real coffee. It was some kind of oats, I think, that was in it. Their bread was very, very rough. And instead of margarine or butter, it was fat they put on top, and that's what they were eating. So if you had any coffee or cigarettes or soap, you could get anything.
But you didn't.
I don't know.
Anything else about your time there? What rank were you? I should have. Did you get any promotion, or during the time, or did
no, you? No, not really. I was quite happy with it because with promotion in the guards, you weren't allowed to go out with your ordinary ranks. So that was it.
So you didn't seek it?
I didn't.
And you weren't offered it?
I didn't take it. They wanted me a corporal early on, before I was in the 3rd Battalion. But I took it, and of course I continued to go out with the boys that I'd gone into the army with. And I was caught by an officer in the Croydon, and they reported me, and I was up on a charge for going out with an ordinary rank. And the commanding officer said to me... you realise, he says, you're breaking the law. I said, well, sir, I said, I don't want to be a corporal. I said, because, I said, this friend of mine, I said, joined the Scots Guards with me. I said, I would like to keep his friendship. Right, fallen Guardsman Campbell. And that was the end of my... only lasted about 6 months. That was the end, so I never forgot it again. You just weren't allowed to walk out with ordinary ranks. And I thought that was terrible.
Now, anything else happened while you were, in the Cologne area?
We were in, outside Cologne, we had, it was this big house. It was a massive driveway up to it. We were in there for a while. It was so big, it had a dance floor into the house. There was an old lady and a young woman who we shifted out the house, and we put them into the lodge, which was at the end of the driveway. It was surrounded by woods, I remember that. And they had a baby grand piano And the boys used to ask me, not that I can play right, but I could more or less knock a tune out of piano, used to ask me to play. And what was the tune that they all liked then going on? Chat Anglais. They always used to ask me to play that. That was a favourite then. And they used to play that on this piano. So we're raking round the house, and I found a pile of newspapers, Edinburgh Evening News, big pile in this cupboard. So the young girl used to come up and take some of the furniture out of the big house down to the lodge to make this all more comfortable, which we didn't mind. And I asked her, I said, how come you people have got Edinburgh Evening News? I said, that's where I come from in Scotland. She says, my mother, she says, was born in Edinburgh. I said, your mother's German? She said, oh, yes, but she was born in Edinburgh. She said, she's always loved your city. So that was that. But we stayed there for a while. That's where we went out from there to try and get some of the, as they were called, the werewolves.
Now, tell me about the patrols searching for the werewolves.
Well, we went out on patrol.
Was it in the tanks? Or?
No, we were on foot by this time. And the... they were raiding the farms, and most of them were killing a lot of the foreigners that were there. But we found out that there was a lot of prisoners of war, not Germans, Poles, Russians, etc., etc., doing the same thing. The Russians were raiding the farms and killing the German people that were there. They managed to get guns and everything. So it was a case of we're having to look for the Russians, the Poles, the Germans, all at the same time. And we were actually protecting the German farms.
And what do you remember of the patrol? What would a typical patrol be like?
It was just a case of going out and patrol and the... going to X spot and lying low and watching this farm. You got word through the grapevine that this farm was open to the werewolves. So you just went out. It was spot luck, really. You went out. You know, if they raided it, you were there. If they raided it, you weren't there. Just too bad. You were probably at another farm. There was an awful lot of the woods around there. And you had to be very careful because we were taking a pot shot at you as well. So it was a case of just crawling and watching, listening, and that was all.
Did you ever find anyone?
No. We just missed one of them. He was a German soldier, actually. He had been living in this tent outside this farm, and we had got word about it. We didn't know who he was, nor nothing. And we surrounded the farm, and we burst into the tent. It was a bivouac he had. His shaving brush was still soaking with soap, and the small mug he had, the water where he was shaved, was still hot. But he had gone. So we questioned the farm people, but nine, that's all you got, nine, didn't know anything. And we just had to leave it at that. We didn't know where he was. So we never ever found him.
Now, what entertainment was organised for you as troops during that period? Because, you know...
Well, when we were in Berkheim, as I said, they organised dances. The city was opened up in the different places. We went to this concert in Cologne. It was called Steinbach Ballet. And of course the boys looked at each other. Ballet? Who the hell wants to go to ballet? Oh, there's nothing else to do, let's go. So we tripped down to this hall. The orchestra's sitting, I'm sitting with a crowd of the lads. And the orchestra came out and started to tune up. So my mate says to me, that boy in the orchestra's keeping staring at you. Staring at me. Who? So I looked down And the boy smiled. And I turned around to see who he was smiling at. And I turned back, and he's pointing at me. I don't know what he wants. I don't know any Germans. However, the ballet started up, and it was the most comical ballet we have ever seen. We had the whole place laughing. It wasn't ballet. It was based on ballet. But it was comical. It was sexy. It was crude. Typical army. It was really good. However, the interval came, and this German came walking up, and he stopped in front of me. He said, I know you in broken English. I said, no, I'm afraid. I said, you're making a mistake. I says, I don't know you. He says, I know you. He said, refuse German officer biscuits. You were a prisoner of war? Aye. I said, oh yeah. I said, you remember me? That was about, I'd say about 3 or 4 months previous, when we had taken 1,500 prisoners, put them in this field. There was German Waff girls, Luftwaffe girls, I should say, German officers, army, Air Force, was even some Navy boys there. And in the morning, we had them all lined up, and we were feeding them, and they had one tin, about a foot high, of German sausage to six of them, and each man got a hat full of biscuits, hardtack biscuits, British biscuits. And they moved on, so they had a hat full of biscuits and one tin of German sausage between them. And this officer came up to me, and I was feeding them out, so took his hat, gave them biscuits, you see, move on, nine. And he started to speak in German, and I spoke a bit of German, and I understood he wanted a tin of German sausage to himself. And I said, no, I am officer. I said, you do not get one tin to yourself. One tin for six. So, no, he wouldn't move. So I shouted on the sergeant. Sergeant came up. I says, he wants a tin of sausage all to himself. He refuses to move. Right. So he took the biscuits from him. Just gave him a push. He says, he gets nothing. Pushed him away. And this boy must have been at the back of him and recognised me 4 to 5 months later. But I didn't know him, but he knew me. You not give officer biscuits. It must be.